Thank you for joining me. I'm Kimberly Rogers, and you're listening to this week's Torah portion from Friday sundown to Saturday sundown. This message is brought to you by themessianicmessage.com. themessianicmessage.com. I hope that you enjoy this teaching. This week's Torah portion is Bahar and Bakukutai. Both of those mean on the mount and in my statutes. It's Leviticus chapter 25, starting at verse 1 to Leviticus chapter 27, verse 34. The Haftarahs are Jeremiah chapter 32, verses 6 to 27, and Jeremiah 16, verses 19 to 21, and Jeremiah 17, verses 1 to 21. 1 to 14. The Brit Hadashah is Luke chapter 4, verses 16 to 21, and Matthew 21, verses 33 to 46, respectively, for each one of those Torah portions in our double portion for this week. Before we get started, let's say a word of prayer. Baruch atah Yehovah Eloheinu Melech HaOlam. Blessed are you, O Lord our God, King of the universe and Creator of all things. And blessed are we that you have given us your Torah and are calling us back to your land. I just thank you for your Sabbaths, your Shemitah years, your Jubilee years. And I just ask that you would annul any of my own words and that only your words would thrive. I pray for your protection and preservation of all your people wherever they may be on this Sabbath. In the name of Yeshua. Amen. All right, well, let's get started because we're going to learn about the land. And the first thing I want to explain to you is that the land is a living entity. Now, I know some of you are going to get your ears pricked up there and say, oh, she's talking about some New Age things, you know, the nature worshippers. You know, they say that the earth is a living entity and they call her Gaia. No, this is not what I'm talking about. But we need to understand that the land is alive, don't we? Because nothing dead can give life, right? Could a dead thing give life? There has to be life in the land in order for there to be life to live on the land, in order for the fruits and the trees and the animals to thrive there. There has to be life going on in that land, in the eretz, in the soil. You understand what I'm saying? And as a living entity, we have to do certain things to protect the land, because otherwise we kill the land if we don't do the things that need to be done in order to protect the land. You know, we got kicked out of there because we were killing the land. We were not doing the things that protected the land. Now, we're going to talk about Shemitah and Jubilee years, but I'm going to concentrate more on the Jubilee because it's prophetic, and I'm doing more of a prophetic teaching this time rather than about so much the heart. I don't know why that is. It's just the way that the teaching came out when I was studying it and writing out my notes. And so apparently this is what the Lord wants me to teach, although there are heart matters in here, because I will tell you that if your heart is not in the land, you're not going to take care of the land. You're not going to care about the land. In fact, we have people living in the land right now who don't give a hoot about the land. They care about their political agendas and their religious agendas. I'm talking about secular Jews, and I'm talking about ultra-Orthodox folks who live in the land but don't want to have anything to do with that West Bank thing and you know, protecting Israel. And, you know, this is why Israel has had to have this vote in the Knesset to make these people join the IDF. Because they couldn't have cared less about protecting that land, you see. Well, if your heart is not in the land, it doesn't care whether your body is there or not, right? Your body can be anywhere, but the Lord wants our heart to be in the land. But we're going to go into the prophecies of the land and some other things about the Jubilee years. One of the things that I find interesting is that the counting for the Jubilee year is exactly as Shavuot. You know, only Jubilees is counted in years and Shavuot is counted in day. And so, in the Jubilee, though, what you get is an additional year of rest for the land. What you get at Shavuot is an additional day. So, in Jubilees, you count 7 times 7, which is 49. And then you add 1 and you get the additional year of rest for the land. And at Shavuot, you count 70 times 7, or 49 days, and then you get the additional day of rest for what? What is Shavuot? It's a year, it's a day of proclamation, right? The Jubilee year is a year of proclamation. It's the time when all things get restored. And this is why many people believe that it will be a Jubilee year when the Lord returns, when Yeshua returns, because he's going to return, and I believe he's coming back at Yom Kippur. Some people say at the Feast of Trumpets, but he's coming back to make this proclamation at Yom Kippur, because the scriptures tell us that Jubilees starts at Yom Kippur. We're going to look about that in a little bit. But Jubilee is both prophetic, and it is the way that the Lord teaches us about his sovereignty over the land and over us. Now, prophetically speaking, how we arrive to the idea that Jubilee is prophetic is because we understand that Jubilee comes on the 50th year. But Noah's time, you know, the Lord told Noah that man would have 120 years, you know, for us to, you know, wrangle with the Lord, and that was all he was going to give us, was 120 years, right? 120 times 50 is 6,000. That gives us 6,000 years that are to be fulfilled before the king comes back to his land. And that is how we arrive at this teaching that the Jubilee is prophetic, as well as teaching us the Lord's sovereignty over the land. Yeshua referred to the Jubilees a couple of times. We're going to examine those incidents where he referred to the Jubilees. Let's go to Luke chapter 4, verse 17, and it says, because he's in the synagogue there, and he is getting up to read from the prophet Isaiah, and it says, when he had opened the book, he found the place where it was written, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because he has anointed me to preach the gospel to the poor. He has sent me to heal the brokenhearted, to preach deliverance to the captives, and recovering of sight to the blind, to set at liberty them that are bruised, to preach the acceptable year of the Lord." And then, of course, he stops. So he's talking there about the healing, the preaching, and recovering of sight, and setting at liberty. You see, that's part of what the Jubilees is about, is the setting at liberty. And then he says to preach the acceptable year of the Lord, which is also a reference to the year of Jubilees. The year of Jubilees is a time when we're going to have the gospel preached to us. And oh, by the way, we don't really know the gospel. And I'm not going to go into, you know, getting into a long dissertation about how that's true. But we really don't know the gospel. Because some of us teach the mechanics of the Torah, which is part of the gospel, over the spirit of the gospel, and some people teach the spirit of the gospel over the mechanics of the gospel, and practically nobody gets it right when, you know, in balance with having the mechanics and the spirit of the gospel in there, you know. But in the Jubilee, you know, in that 7,000 year period when the Jubilee has been declared at that Yom Kippur, and then from there on we have the Millennial Kingdom, why, we're going to start to get that gospel preached to us. And we're going to get our broken hearts healed. And he's going to preach the deliverance of the captives, you see. We're captives right now, and so we're going to be delivered, and he's going to teach us all about our deliverance, and we're going to recover our sight. We talk about the veils across our eyes. Well, we're not going to have veils across our eyes anymore. We're going to see clearly, and we're going to be set at liberty, because we have been bruised out here in the diaspora where we are, and it's all in the acceptable year of the Lord, which is the Jubilee year. Now, what he was saying here, what he was reading from in Luke chapter 4, starting at verse 17, comes from Isaiah 61, starting at verse 1. And it's exactly the same thing. It says, "The Spirit of the Lord God is upon me, because the Lord has anointed me to preach good tidings to the meek. He has sent me to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim liberty to the captives, and the opening of the prison to them that are bound, to proclaim the acceptable year of the Lord, and the day of vengeance of our God, to comfort all that mourn, to appoint to them that mourn in Zion, to give to them beauty for ashes, the oil of joy for mourning, the garment of praise for the spirit of heaviness, that they might be called trees of righteousness, the planting of the Lord, that he might be glorified." Now, you'll notice that I read there a little bit longer than what Yeshua read when he was in the synagogue. That's because he stopped after the acceptable year of the Lord. Now, that's partly because he was there not to do the day of vengeance, you know, but also partly because there are some other things that he taught about the Jubilee year, and we're going to get to that in just a little bit. But one of the things that he did say about his kingdom is that it is like a man who went on a trip. As he left home, he put his servants in charge, each with his own work, and he ordered the doorkeeper to be alert. And he says, "So keep on watching, because you don't know when the master of the house is coming, whether in the evening, at 3 a.m, or at dawn. Otherwise, he may come suddenly and find you asleep. I'm telling you what I'm telling everyone, be alert." So what he's doing here in telling us this and in tying it back to the acceptable year of the Lord is that there is more to come in that acceptable year of the Lord, and we need to keep watching. It's very easy for us to get sleepy and not want to pay attention to this anymore. But the Jubilee is, getting back to the original thought, is the way that the Lord exercises his sovereignty over us, and which is why he had the authority and the reason to kick us into exile for our disobedience. But there's hope for us, even though we are kicked out of the land because of our disobedience, because the Jubilee is there to restore all things. That's why he says, "Watch, I'm coming back. I'm coming to restore all things. Keep your eyes open." You see, the land is always restored to its rightful owners. You know, if you have in the course of that 50 years, if you have sold your land to somebody, guess what? In the Jubilee year, you get your land back. If you have debts, guess what? You get them forgiven. This is very all tied up in actually this Jubilee year about the land actually teaches us about the Lord's forgiveness and how we're supposed to treat each other. There's just a whole lot of stuff here in this Jubilee year. And so what this is good news for us, because it means that none of us can ever become permanent slaves to anyone else. You know, right now we are slaves. We are in exile, and we are slaves to, well, we're slaves, if we're in America, to the American government. And if you're in South Africa, you're a slave to the South African government. And if you're in Russia, you're a slave to that government, you see. So we here at the end times are a generation that are really having to learn the hard way, the lesson about slavery all over again, just like that first generation did. But the land has been granted by the Lord to Abraham and his descendants, and that grant can never be taken away. This is why the land is our inheritance, and why our hearts need to be tied up with the land. We I love the stories that people tell when they go to Israel and they get off the plane and they're so overwhelmed. They just have this surge of love and affection for the land. And I've heard people say they even get down and kiss the ground, you know, because they feel like they're so home and they don't want to come back. That's the kind of heart that we need to have for the land. But even more heart toward the land is that, you know, this next time around, we're not going to get ourselves kicked out of there because we have not kept the Shemitah and Jubilee years. Now, the owner, who is the Lord, has given us the privilege of living on the land, but it's at his behest. And provisionally, it's as long as we keep his rules. In Matthew 18:21, it says, "Then came Peter to him and said, Lord, how often shall my brother sin against me and I forgive him? Till seven times?" You know, seven is very important in Hebrew understanding. And so Peter said seven times because seven is the number of completion, right? I mean, if you forgive somebody seven times, it ought to be done with, right? What does the Lord say in Matthew 18, starting at verse 22? Yeshua said to him, "I say not to you until seven times, but until 70 times seven." That's 490 times. "Therefore is the kingdom of heaven likened to a certain king, which would take account of his servants, and when he had begun to reckon," oh, by the way, in the wilderness, you and I are going to meet with him face to face, and he's going to do a reckoning account with each one of us personally. "And when he had begun to reckon, one was brought to him which owed him 10,000 talents." Oh boy, if you've got a debt. "But forasmuch as he had nothing to pay with, his Lord commanded him to be sold, and his wife and children and all that he had, and payment to be made. The servant therefore fell down and worshipped him, saying, Lord, have patience with me, and I will pay you all. Then the Lord of that servant was moved with compassion and loosed him and forgave him the debt. But the same servant went out and found his fellow servants, which owed him 100 pennies, and he laid his hands on him and took him by the throat and said, Pay me what you owe. And his fellow servant fell down at his feet and besought him, saying, Have patience with me, and I will pay you all. But he would not, but went and cast him into prison till he should pay the debt. So when his servants saw what was done, they were very sorry and came and told their Lord all that was done." You see, we get to go to the master and say, you know, that guy over there, he's doing not a good thing to that person. You see, we do have the right to speak to the Lord about things that we see. We also have the right to go to our master for things that are done to us. Then his Lord, after that he called him, said to him, O you wicked servant, I forgave you all that debt because you desired me. Should you not also have had compassion on your fellow servant, even as I had pity on you? See, this fellow servant is in the same kingdom as the guy that the Lord just forgave. You do understand that we're talking about two bond servants here, right? You don't have the right to ask the Lord to forgive you of something and then go require that same thing of somebody else. You see, that's one of the messages here in what Yeshua is saying. But there's more to it here, and it does relate to Jubilees. And then verse 34, and his Lord was wroth with him and delivered him to the tormentors till he should pay all that was due. So what's happening out here in the exile? We are being tormented. Now, we're going to look at chapter 26 of Leviticus, which is in this Torah portion, where the Lord tells us, if you don't obey me, I'm going to visit punishments on you seven times. And if you don't obey me, I'm going to visit seven times seven. And if you don't obey me, I'm going to visit seven times seven times seven. And he says this four times until we get to seven times seven times seven times seven. You see? So we're going to take a look at that in a little bit. But what was Yeshua's thing here with the 70 times 7, the 490 times? Where does that come from? Well, it comes from when the Jews, who he was talking to, had been taken into Babylon. They were taken captive into Babylon because of their particular sin. There were a lot of things that they did. But in Jeremiah 34, we learn that the one thing that they did that really made the Lord angry was that they were told to keep the Jubilee. And so what they did, it says here in verse 8, after the king Zedekiah had made a covenant with all the people were at Jerusalem to proclaim liberty, that's Jubilees, to them, that every man should let his manservant and every man his maidservant, being a Hebrew or a Hebrewess, go free, that none should serve himself of them, to wit, of a Jew, his brother. So, you see, they had some slaves, and the Lord said, you need to let them go free. And that is associated with a Shemitah year. Okay, and that then the Shemitahs all add up until we get seven of Shemitahs, which makes 49 years, and then there's a Jubilee, right? But going back to this, he's talking here about Shemitah years. So what they did, though, was in verse 10, it says that they all let all their servants go, right? But afterward, in verse 11, they turned and caused those same servants and handmaids to become subject to them again. You can go and read all that in Jeremiah chapter 34. And it says in verse 14, at the end of 7 years, you're supposed to let every man go. Thus says the Lord in verse 13, I made a covenant with your fathers in the day that I brought them forth out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondmen, saying, this is, you know, where this is coming right out of today's Torah portion, right here in Leviticus, where the Lord said, at the end of 7 years, let every man, his brother, a Hebrew, which has been sold to you and which has served you 6 years, you shall let him go free. But your fathers hearkened not unto me, neither inclined their ear. So what Jeremiah is saying here is that, you know, you were told to do this way back there, you know, several hundred years ago, and you haven't yet done it, you see. And so now it says, You are turned and had done right in my sight in proclaiming liberty, every man to his neighbor. And you had made a covenant before me in the house which is called by my name. Then you turned and polluted my name. and caused every man his servant and every man his handmaid, whom you had set at liberty at their pleasure, to return, and brought them into subjection to be to you for servants and handmaids. Therefore, thus says the Lord, you have not hearkened to me, you haven't listened to me, in proclaiming liberty and letting everyone remain free, so I proclaim a liberty for you. This is a play on words. He says, you don't want my liberty? Here's a liberty that you can have when I remove you to all the kingdoms of the earth. You think this is fun? I'm going to set you outside the land, and now you're going to be slaves 70 times 7. Now, from Leviticus chapter 26, verse 12, the Lord tells us, as I said before, that the length of our punishments for disobedience are 7. And there's each one is 7 times more than the former punishment, if you go and read that there. In Leviticus 26:34, it says, then shall the land enjoy her Sabbaths as long as it lies desolate, and you be in your enemy's land, even then shall the land rest and enjoy her Sabbaths. So, what the Lord is saying there is that there's coming a time when you're going to disobey about these Sabbaths, these Shemitah and Jubilee years that the Lord has given for the land, and guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to make the land lie desolate. In other words, you're not going to be in there. And then the land is going to have her rest. Well, the people violated the land for 70 years. Now I'm going to prove that to you. 2 Chronicles chapter 36, verses 20 and 21. And them that had escaped from the sword carried he away to Babylon, where they were servants to him and his sons until the reign of the kingdom of Persia. This is when the Jews are going into Babylon, into captivity. Verse 21, to fulfill the word of the Lord by the mouth of Jeremiah. Oh my goodness. See, Jeremiah said that this was going to happen, and the Lord is fulfilling Jeremiah's words. Until the land has enjoyed her Sabbaths, for as long as she lay desolate, she kept Sabbath to fulfill 70 years. What is 70? That's 60. What's 10? 60 and 10 is 70 years. So you see, when Yeshua said to the disciples, how many times are you supposed to forgive? 70 times 7, 490 times. He's relating it back to the Shemitah years, to the years of being set free, and then, of course, on into the Jubilee year, which is another year of freedom and complete restoration. That's what he's relating that to, you see. So the curses with the 7 times increasing punishments correlate to the great tribulation, you see. After that, he will come back to set his land up, you know, to set up the land so that it can be his kingdom. And, of course, we know that Jubilee starts at Yom Kippur. Why does Jubilee start at Yom Kippur? It's because it says there in Leviticus chapter 25, verse 9, then you shall cause the trumpet of the Jubilee to sound on the 10th day of the 7th month. That is the day in which we celebrate Yom Kippur. That's the day of the Jubilees. In the Day of Atonement shall you make the trumpet sound throughout all your land. That's because the Jubilee and the Shemitah years are corporate observances. Yom Kippur is corporate cleansing, and Passover is personal cleansing. So the things that come at Yom Kippur, these are corporate things. These are, pertain to our corporate relationship with the Lord, whereas the spring feasts pertain to our personal relationship with the Lord. Now, this is also probably going to be a little strange when I say this to you, but you know, that land that he selected over there that we call Israel, and that he gave the boundaries to Abraham to, You know, that land is what he selected for the purpose of setting up a new world order global government. You do know that the kingdom to come, see, we talk about this new world order, and it's a bad thing for us, because this new world order wants to enslave us even further than we are. But you see, the Lord has his own new world order with Yeshua in charge, and it's going to be a global government with the headquarters being there in Jerusalem, and the people who work in that government, the priests, the bride, occupying the land of Israel. You see the how that's going to work, and then everybody else outside the land. Now, I don't have time to go into it, but you can look up in the scriptures and find where it talks about people that live in other countries that have to come and worship the Lord, you see, from other countries, and especially from Egypt, where if they don't come up from Egypt, you know, he's going to punish them with no rain. There are people who will be living all over the earth who will come to Jerusalem to worship him in this new world order. But we are looking forward to this one, you see. We're trying to help to get him to, you know, come back and just destroy this one that the beast is trying to set up, you see. So we want to make a difference between the kingdom, the new world that's coming with his kingdom, and the new world that the beast is trying to bring. But the Lord also puts a value on the land. And where we learn about some of these values starting in starting in chapter 25. So the value that he puts on that land is something that we have to abide by. And, you know, he also puts value on people, as we're going to see in a couple of the next chapters, in chapter 27, which is all about the values that the Lord puts on people serving in the tabernacle or temple who are not priests. That's how chapter 27 starts out. It tells us about his valuations and how he values some things. And then it also in chapter 27 tells us that he gives authority to the priests to make valuations of certain things. And he also in chapter 27 sets the temple currency that is to be used for valuations, and he tells us that that is to be the shekel. The shekel always has been, is now, and always will be the temple currency. Verse 1, the Lord spoke to Moses, tell the Israelites that when a person makes a special vow based on the appropriate value of people who belong to the Lord. You see, there are vows of service and possessions that we can give to the Lord. Now, we're talking about vows here. We're not priests. But we may be able to offer ourselves or some of our possessions. What kind of things? Well, Leviticus chapter 27, verses 2 through 8 talks about people. Leviticus chapter 27, verses 9 to 13 talks about cattle that, you know, we can vow. That's over and above what we would give for a sacrifice and an offering. And our homes. Leviticus 27, 14 and 15, and our land, Leviticus 27, verses 16 to 25, all of which can be redeemed, except for, of course, we can't redeem sacrificed animals, but these are all personal things, personal items that we own, their possessions, or ourselves, and the Lord puts a value on these. And, you know, it's like if we want to vow to, you know, be employed there in sweeping the floor or running errands or whatever additional things that the priests may need for us to do. I mean, we see at the time of Zechariah that there was a woman who prayed there in the temple when Yeshua was born, and Hannah giving her son as a vowed to give her son. There was a value for her son, you see. Now, we also see that the priests get to make valuations there in this chapter. And of course, I have done a teaching about the authority that the priests were given by the Lord. In fact, we're going to have a Torah portion called Pinchas, in which we're going to learn about the authority that the priests have over the tabernacle and the temple. But generally speaking, we don't like when somebody says your value is whatever. Like, we don't like to have the Lord go ahead and tell us that, you know, if we want to come and be of service there, that, you know, a male is from 20 years old to 60 years old is 50 shekels of silver, you know, after the shekel of the sanctuary, you know, or a female is 30 shekels instead of 50 shekels. You know, it's like, well, we've got to start then putting our cultural thing on top of that and say, well, why are women worth less than, you know, than the men? And trying to question what the Lord makes as a evaluation for us. But the truth of the matter is that when we submit ourselves to whatever the Lord decides about us, we are doing our due service. It's our reasonable service to the Lord to accept what He says for us. That if this is our value in His eyes, then this is our value in His eyes. It doesn't mean that He doesn't value us in other ways. He's here in this chapter putting monetary values on service to the tabernacle or the temple. And so, for the purpose of what He's trying to do here, it is our duty to submit to the Lord's rules for us and for His rules for the land, if we expect to enter into His kingdom, to live in Israel, and not find ourselves living outside of Israel. So, there's a lot to learn in this Torah portion, and the humility to accept the Lord's valuation and the priest's valuations for ourselves and for our possessions, and the humility for us to just go ahead and keep the Shemitah and the Jubilee years is what this Torah portion is about. It's about our humility in regards to that. And our humility has to do with our hearts. I know I said earlier that it doesn't have so much to do about the heart as about the prophecies and other things, but ultimately here I am. I'm back at the heart, because you're not going to subject yourself to keeping the Shemitah and Jubilee years for the land if you don't have a heart for it. And truly, that's what the Lord wants. He wants us to have the heart for it. That's why He revolves Bible prophecies around the land, around the timing of the Shemitah and the Jubilees. You see, this is why He does that, because He wants our hearts to be toward the gift that He's given us. Well, I hope this Torah portion has been a blessing to you. Shabbat Shalom.